Get 15% off a set of BrakeBest Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete. What's up?
And on The Stack, we talk about a ton of books that have come out this week. Spoiler warning at the front, so people don't get on my jock about all the spoilers and stuff, okay? We're going to get into the books. We're going to talk
Still about touchy gonna... about that, huh?
I'm always touchy. That's my secret cap. I'm always touchy.
Oh, boy.
Well, let's see if we're going to be touching this first book of the 10-foot. No, I'm not going to try it. I already tried it, though. It's too late. Stop. We're too far deep in here, Pete. Stop. NYX, number one from Marvel, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, art by Francesco Mortarito. We are continuing the From the Ashes era. And in this case, we are following a bunch of the younger characters in the X-Men world as they all interact in New York City. Specifically, our window character, as usual, is Miss Marvel, though we have a bunch of others that show up here. We have one of the Cuckoos show up. We have a Noel. Prodigy is now a teacher at Empire State University. Laura Kinney, the Wolverine, shows up.
Yeah.
A couple of other characters here. I was very intrigued to check this one out because I think we've been mixed on the stuff from the Front of the Ashes era so far. I think I aired probably a little more negative on X-Men, a little more positive on Phoenix. So where does this fall? Before I get to any reactions on my part, Pete, what about you? You're the fresh eyes on this fresh new era of X-Men, so I'm curious to get your opinion.
Well, I thought this was a cool-ish, great art and action. The Wolverine and the Miss Marvel was fun. I think it was interesting that the letters page copied our Slack asking people about their first X-Men experience.
No. We asked in the Slack about that because that was in the letters page.
Okay. Well, we're out of our time.
It's a real chicken and egg situation, except it's clear which came first.
Okay. The Croatian or whatever he is, Krakowian, is dumb.
Is what? Is dumb. Oh.
Yeah.
I disagree. I kind of knew pretty much for the first couple of pages I was going to be in the tag for this, but I love generally books about like younger characters interacting in the Marvel Universe, but I love that this is like 20-somethings in New York, which is something that I feel like I haven't really read before, which I'm interested to check out. It feels like a young adult drama with superheroics thrown in. I thought there was a great twist at the end here, which I will not spoil, but I love the stuff that we find out towards the end of the issue. I do really like the Krakoan as this thing that won't let them go. They're trying to move on with their lives, but a lot of their Prodigy is teaching a class about Krakoan history, and I think it's Esme Cuckoo really digs into him for being like, yo, the body's not even cold, dude. What are you doing here? Stop treating it like it's history, which I thought was, as usual, for Kelly and Lansing. Well, I thought there was some smart criticism for the way that we treat history as immediately like, oh, that happened last week. Look back there at that thing. That's way in the past. So I think there's some interesting things they could be saying in this book that I'm excited to check out. I like the interplay. As usual, like I said, Miss Marvel is a great in-character. Overall, I thought this was a really good pilot issue, if I can call it that.
Yeah, it's a great number one.
There you go. Pilot issue. I believe that's the term. Let's turn to the next pilot issue, which is Absolute Power Origins number one from DC Comics, written by John Ridley, art by Aletha Martinez. Now, back at our live show a couple of months back, we had John Ridley on, and he teased that there was a character he would be writing for DC that he had never written before, but once you heard what it was, it would make a lot of sense. I believe that is this comic, which is the definitive origin of Amanda Waller, which has shockingly never really been told in comics before. And I thought that had to be incorrect, but I did a bunch of research and it seems like it hasn't. So here we go. We find out Amanda Waller's backstory, why she does what she does, and right from the first page, it is contrasting it with the rise of Batman, which I thought was a really interesting choice here. What'd you think about this one, Pete?
Yeah, the way that that parallels was such a cool, interesting thing. And then to kind of watch her kind of like as Batman gets kind of more, you know, attention and kind of help, it kind of breaks her. And I think that's a very interesting kind of point of view and a very smart way to kind of do it. The problem that I'm having is that Amanda Waller is a villain, and you know, so it makes me kind of like less interested in like how she got to where she is. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want her to win, so I have a less of a caring attitude about how she came to be. And also, it was kind of weird to me that we had this kind of real cover, and my first, I was like, well, that's not Viola Davis. I thought I was hoping for Viola Davis's Amanda Waller. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. The cover is interesting in terms of its photorealism. I'm not quite sure.
Artistically, it's impressive.
Yeah. I'm not sure what the goal was there necessarily, because like you said, it doesn't match Aletha Martinez's art inside, which feels much more like late 2000s to me, sort of like all of Mark Bagley on Ultimate Spider-Man type. Maybe not quite as exaggerated. John really knows how to write some politically smart stuff. So like you said, there's a lot of interesting ideas that are popping up here in terms
also,
of...
Also... Oh, sorry. I
was just going to say grassroots politics. That was the end of my sentence.
Yeah, yeah. That's also is very interesting. But also the reveal of her smoking after she makes that promise, I thought was mm-hmm. such a interesting character reveal as well of like...
Yeah,
you know, I'm a liar. I'll do whatever it takes to win. Like, I'm
well,
gonna...
that's the thing is that I understand what you're saying, and I know you well enough, Pete, to know this is not going to change your mind or anything. But I don't think John Ridley is forgiving her just by explaining her. He is giving her this backstory that hopefully makes sense when it all comes together. But it's trying to explain who she is now, and in fact, is very specifically tying into the absolute power event and trying to explain why she is doing the things she is doing in that. So I thought that was cool. Supermassive 2024 from Image Comics, written by Matt Groom, Kyle Higgins, Ryan Parrott, Melissa Flores, and Joe Clark. Art by Stefano Simeone. We are getting another mashup of a bunch of characters. Massive Verse. This is now a yearly event. And here, yeah. This is tying into the events of Radiant Black, where we have been following two timelines in two different books. One where the bearer of Radiant Black, this all-powerful black hole, goes evil. One where he does not. And this book is one of the main bad guys of the Massive Universe, basically putting a Ocean's Eleven-style group together to go on a prison break heist into the bad dimension. I thought this was such a smart concept for this book, such a great way to bring these characters together. Everyone got their moment to the sun, and there's some really interesting big stuff that happens that's really going to affect the Massiverse going forward. So another winner from this universe.
Yeah, they're just killing it. First off, amazing cover. I loved all the action in this. Love the splash pages. Yeah, like you said, big stuff happening, and the art is just killing it as well. I also like, you know, spoilers a little bit here, but for what happened in the comic, but I love the hero timeline line at the end there. That was really mm-hmm. cool. They did so many small stuff great in this, and so many huge stuff great in this. They're really examples of how to kind of do events and how to kind of affect other comics and other kind of characters in this comics universe in such a well oiled machine type of way that just makes sense and is very cool as a reader. I'm having a blast.
Nemesis, Rogues Gallery number 1 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Mark Millar, art by Valerio Gian Giordano. It has been a good long while since we talked about a Mark Millar comic book on this podcast. And a lot of that, not to pull back the curtain too much, but over at Image Comics, he never sent over any copies for review. That was never really put out there, versus now that he's at Dark Horse, that's happening again. So great to check in on his white suit Batman, who is evil, and see what's going on with him. I hated this book. What about you, Pete?
Oh, wow. Interesting take on that. Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought this was kind of over the top Mark Millar sweet spot. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're going to kind of get a little bit. You know what I mean? It's going to be gross. It's going to be like, you know what I mean? It's kind of an evil Batman kind of take. So I felt like they did a good job doing that in an interesting
I think I probably feel about this the same way you feel about the Amanda Waller stuff, because reading this book the entire time, I felt, why do we need to follow this character? He is evil Batman in a white suit who is tearing people apart and biting their necks off, talking to this universe's version of Ra's al Ghul that's barely masked and doing some Lazarus Pit stuff. That's not a spoiler. It's on the cover. You can see it, exactly what's going on. But I don't care. Are they going to kill him? No, because Mark Millar likes this character too much and wants to keep him going. So they're going to have a bunch of people who are going to come up against him and try to take him down and all die in horrible ways. There's nothing fun to me to watch somebody be a dick for several issues.
That's what's really nice about you kind of knowing me so well, is that's exactly what I was saying with the Amanda Waller comic, where I was like, why do I want to watch her be a shitty parent? You know what I mean? Like, I already know she manipulated the crap out of one kind of a character as a child and kind of ruined her. Why do I want to watch her ruin another childhood in this other origin story that's very frustrating. So I can understand what you're saying.
Well, I think the difference for me is Amanda Waller exists in the DC universe. So I have faith that there is a point when she might change or have a realization. You know, she's always going to stay Amanda Waller. She's always going to be manipulative. She's always going to be in charge of the Suicide Squad. But I could see absolute power heading to a place where she's like, oh God, I've gone too far, and regret her actions, versus a Mark Millar book. This guy's going to be like, I loved killing people and I continue to love killing people. Check out this gross thing that just happened.
All right. That makes sense. But I don't think that's going to happen with Amanda Waller. Amanda Waller's whole thing is,
do you want to bet like $5,000?
Something like that. I do not have that kind of money.
Neither do I, man, but let's do it.
No, I don't. I don't want to do that.
Okay. we'll revisit this by the end of the podcast. We'll
okay, great. It's
Ultimate Black Panther, number 6 from Marvel, written by Brian Hill, art by Carlos Nieto. In this Ultimate Universe, Black Panther is dealing with a anti-vibranium that is bringing life instead of metal, and Moon Knight, who is evil, is using that to do some stuff. Lots going on in this book.
Yeah, I had a blast with this. We had Khonshu getting followers, performing miracles, you know, spoilers. Killmonger and Storm making out. And then we have like kind of a setup of Khonshu versus Wakanda. This should be interesting. I'm having fun with this. This feels a little Ultimate. I feel like they warmed up and now they're kind of rolling with their idea. So amazing art. I think this is fun.
Now, before we get to the next title, I do want to mention that for this stack only, I broke up both our Power Hour talking about Absolute Power and our Blood Block talking about Blood.
I did notice that.
Yeah, there weren't a lot of DC and Marvel books, and I like to pepper them throughout the stack. So it felt dumb to take most of their books and jam them out all at the same time. So there you go.
I thought maybe you got negative feedback about us saying things like, oh, no. Power
I've
hour.
Only got
the blood back.
No, people have been legitimately stopping me on the street and be like, hey man, thank you so much for saying Power Hour and Blood Block like that. The other day, And this is true. I was at a coffee shop, and this little boy, like, sort of just started tug on my shirt. He was like, "Are you the man who says blood block?"
Wow.
Thank you.
You know how I know this is a lie? Yes. Is because you don't acknowledge people when you go out into the world.
Absolutely not. I don't look them in the eye. I don't talk to them. And if they touch me, I slap their hands away. I don't care how old they are.
Yeah, because you're playing Pokemon Go and you can't be bothered.
I'm busy. I got to catch a Charizard or whatever. Absolute power. Why was that the first Pokemon I thought of? I could have done something more obscure.
You could have done better than that, man.
Yeah. Literally all I can think about is starter Pokemon right now. It's really embarrassing. Absolute power task force 7.
How long you played that game.
I know. I played it earlier today several times. Absolute power task force 7 number 2 from DC Comics, written by John Layman, art by Max Rayner. This is a semi-anthology style book, which is following the Amazos, who are attacking the DC universe and taking everybody's powers. In this issue, we get to see a little bit of the Doom Patrol and what's going on with them, but mostly it's about Under the Sea with Aquaman his whole family.
Come on, man.
And Depth Charge, the Amazo that's taking them down. What do you think about this, Pete?
Power Hour. Every time Doom Patrol is somewhere, I'm having fun. I love me some Doom Patrol. The Atlantis stuff, as I like to call it, was cool. Great art. And Waller's plan is not going well. She seems disappointed with her evil robot. So I'm hoping that continues.
I just don't understand how this Amazo thing works. And that was really underlined for me in this issue with Aquaman losing his powers, which to me, maybe I've misunderstood Aquaman for my entire life, but I felt like that's like I took this fish's powers and now I can't swim anymore. I don't understand. They took his breathing underwater and talking to fishes. That's part of his body is biology. It's not a separate part of him.
It's talking to fish. You don't say fishes. You know fish, what I mean? It's just talking to fish.
Fishy. I just don't get it. I don't quite understand what's happening here with this whole power taking thing. Maybe there's something to be revealed, or maybe it doesn't matter.
It's absolute power. You gotta have all the power.
I guess. I don't know. There's gotta be something else there. But otherwise, did really like the Doom Patrol stuff on the beach. That was very fun.
Yeah, that's fun.
More of that. The Six Fingers, number 5 from Image Comics, written by Dan Waters, art by Sumit Kumar, was the second of two Link series with One Hand. And this is wrapping up that semi-event as we follow the Six Fingers killer unraveling in the city of Neo Navona, I believe is the name of it, in Navonia. Great Link projects, very trippy, a little bit of, excuse the term, a mind fuck going on here. Mm-hmm. We had the big reveals happen to the final issue of The One Hand, but it was interesting to see this as sort of a coda on the whole thing, and I thought it worked very nicely along with some fantastic art.
Yeah, I thought this was a really intense ish. A lot goes down, and it's kind of crazy. You know, when like in zombie movies, you know, like somebody's like, "Oh, I can't kill my mom. They're a zombie." You know what I mean? When it's like life or death, I feel like that's I don't. You know what I mean? I was like, "Ah, just shoot him." You know what I mean? That's no longer your mom or whatever. But the way that this guy was like, "Oh my God, that's my dad," and then, and spoilers, but immediately stabs. I was just like, "Oh," because it's a weird thing of like, normally when someone pauses, like, "I can't," I'm like, "Bullshit." But in this, they actually did what I wanted, and I was taken aback, like, "Oh, I can't believe you did him like that. That used to be your dad, bro. You didn't even pause. You didn't even." So it was kind of a weird moment for me where I got what I wanted and then was surprised by it. But the story is very interesting, and it's such a kind of creepy, weird take with this kind of like other language, kind of murder language that keeps getting written on the walls and stuff. So, it's very intense-ish. A lot goes down, but it's also impressive the way that they're kind of tying things together and stuff.
Yeah, great series. Definitely pick up both. Actually, don't even pick them up in trade because you kind of got to read them back and forth issue by issue. Get the individual issues and read them in order that way. Berserker, A Face Full of Bullets, number one from Boom Studios, written by Jason Aaron, art by Salvador Larraca. There's another one-shot showing the Keanu Reeves character through time. Here, it's a Western Jason Aaron style as B helps out a woman in distress. What's not to like about this? All of the Berserker stuff is great. Jason Aaron is great and at the top of his powers. Salvador Larraca on the arc. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. This is just, and a fun title, A Face Full of Bullets. Mm-hmm. This is just fun times.
It doesn't bother you that it's faceful instead of faceful, like two words. I wish it was A Face Full of Bullets.
Well, it's a play on Fistful of Bullets, which is famous. It works for me.
Okay.
It was my original point.
Let this be our biggest disagreement on this podcast.
But yeah, I mean, you got Keanu, you got Jason Aaron, you got unbelievable art. This is just, this is a total package, and it really delivers. It's a fun one-shot. And also, the kind of way that it's revealed what actually happens versus what is told, I think was really cool. We've read a lot of comics and seen a lot of twists, but that twist was pretty awesome.
It was very well done. As usual, this is really well paced out. Jason Aaron knows how to write these kind of dark.
He's a great writer. I don't know if you've noticed.
Yeah.
Who knew? Kind of a big deal.
Kind of a big deal. Vengeance of the Moon Knight, number 7 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Alessandro Capuccio. This was when that little kid tugged and was like, when you talk about blood block, will you kick it off? Vengeance of the Moon Knight. This is basically taking a couple of scenes that existed in the last issue of Blood Hunt and expanding on them as Tigra and Hunter's Moon and the Wrecker. Why am I blanking on his name? I don't know. The Wrecker. They do a Khonshu heist.
Of the Wrecker.
Yeah, they free him from a prison, and ultimately, this is spoilers from an issue of Blood Hunt that came out a while ago. Resurrect Moon Knight, Mark Spector, and we get a little bit more of the emotion and background on that. I generally like this issue. It's weird to me that this came out so far after Blood Hunt number 4, and also in terms of resurrecting Mark Spector, that the whole thing was like, how do we resurrect Mark Spector? Well, there he is.
Well, hold on there. How they resurrected released Khonshu, who is his kind of, power source and deity. So once he's free, who's going to hook up? His boy, Mark Spector. That's right. Moon Knight's back, baby, because if Khonshu's rolling deep, he's going to need his boy. So I hear what you're saying. But I politely say comics and say no.
All right, fair enough.
You know what I love about the Blood Hunt? This is just our giant romance movie. The run that we see here of Tigra and Moon Knight, just beautiful.
That was great.
I'm shipping them so hard now. I have never done that before.
I thought that was great, but not to keep harping on the same thing, but I wish it was harder to resurrect Moon Knight, because we spent 6 issues being like, well, he's dead. What a bummer. And had this very interesting exploration of the people left over in his life. And then in the middle of Blood Hunt number 4, they were like, you know what? Khonshu heist. Let's do this. Here we go. He's free. Mark Spector's back. And this issue was like, same thing, but a couple more pages to flesh it out, plus a very nice kiss. And if there had been, not to stretch it out or anything, but if there had been like a 6-issue arc of like setting everything up and then being like, we're going to get them back and here's how we're going to get them back, get to Asgard and do a moon heist, awesome. But as is, it feels very perfunctory, and that it frustrates me. That's all.
I don't know why you're mad, man. We got a beautiful kiss between two characters, and it was
a kissing book.
It's what it is. Yeah. So I'm a sucker for it.
Sorry. I realized we both just did Peter Falk saying, what is this, a kissing book instead of Fred Savage. I apologize to our podcast listening audience.
Yeah, you should. You should. Because I went right into it so quick and then I had to stop myself. And I was like, oh, no, what am I doing? Wrong. Anyone want a peanut?
Green Arrow, number 14 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Sean Isaacs and Amake Nabhulpin. Back on the Absolute Power beat, Green Arrow has joined Amanda Waller's side, and so the Arrow family all heads off on a mission to try to stop stuff. I am still not sold on this many people just using arrows. That's too many people with arrows at that point. But the side mission they get sent on, I thought, was very smartly done. I appreciate it. Obviously, it goes wrong immediately, but spoiler here. But what they realize is they're like, man, we lost Ollie. Clearly, something's going on with him. We'll figure that out later. Right now, Amazos are taking everybody's powers. Who invented Amazos? Professor Ivo. Let's find him and figure out how to take down the Amazos. I was like, great. This is very proactive, and I appreciate that, and I like this mission.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you're having fun because I was not looking forward to reading this issue because I'm very mad at Ollie for just leaving his family and joining Team Waller. And I just wasn't looking forward to this issue. And I read it and then I was just like, we haven't dealt with it yet. I did like the part Team Batman was like, whatever you do, don't leave this island. So, of course, what are they going to do? They're going to leave the island. So I thought that was 100%. Kind of fun.
I think they knew that. They knew
I think they purposely did. I mean, it's not Batman's first rodeo. Mm-hmm.
Have you read that, by the way? Frank Miller's Batman's First Rodeo?
Oh, my God.
Good book.
More clowns than you would have thought. More clowns. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, there's always several clowns around.
Different Joker.
Different types.
Yeah. It's a different type of clown. It's not, you don't think. Yeah, anyways.
Yes.
This bit's going on long enough.
Way too long. Rook Exodus, number 4 from Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Jason Fabuc. We are on a strange alien world where a bunch of people have helmets that can control animals. There's a big conflict going on between some of them. After last issue really opened up the world, I am much more into this. This is a bit of an action mishmash, this issue, but I still had a good time because ultimately I understand more of what's going on here. Pete, you're nodding yes. It seems like, at least in part, you agree.
Yeah, I do. I think this is a fantastic action package. You get really amazing art and really fantastic action. And yeah, I think that the pigs versus birds versus wolves versus snakes is a fun idea. And I really, the more this continues, the more I want an animal helmet. And I think it would be really cool to be able to,
Well, you tried to do that once at the zoo, right? Like release all the animals together to see who would win.
Yeah, it didn't go over well. And thanks for blowing up my spot. I wasn't, nobody was able to pin that on me until now.
Oh, man. Well, this is a sting operation. And you know what really stings is the spooky horror of our next two books. Not one, but two
books. This is the horror block.
We are going to be talking about the new EC Comics is back from Oni Press. They've got two books. The one out this week is Epitaphs from the Abyss, number 1, written by Jay Holtham, Chris Condon, Stephanie Phillips, and Brian Azzarello, art by Jorge Fornes, Peter Krause, Phil Hester, and Vlad Legostav. And then on August 7th is Cruel Universe, number 1, written by Matt Kint, Corinna Becco, Chris Condon, and Ben H. Winters, art by Kano, Caitlin Yarsky, Jonathan Case, and Art Jan Topolin. So Epitaphs from the Abyss is the more horror-focused one. Cruel Universe is the more sci-fi-focused one. But EC Comics is this classic label from back in the day, and Oni Press is making a big deal about putting it out here. Both are short story collections. Yeah. Pete, I know you're not a big horror guy, but what did you think about these?
I think this is a fun collection of scary stories. I felt like they were enjoyable and not too scary where I was like, fuck this. Now I won't be able to sleep at night. But the writer's one is very intense. You know what I mean? I mean, oh, shit, you know?
You mean the first story, Jay Holtham and Jorge Fornes?
Yeah, right.
Yes. Great Jorge Fornes art in there. And that was one of the real standouts of this issue. That's a short story about a frustrated writer who finds out his roommate is a better natural writer than he is. You could probably fill in the dots, but just iconic panels throughout. Absolutely delightful. Chris Condon is in both of these and comports himself ably with two very fun and dark stories as well. I will say, nothing against the man, because he's one of my favorite writers, Brian Azzarello's story at the end here, I did not like. It's a whole, vaxing thing, which I get what he's going for, but I just do not think it works at all, unfortunately.
Doesn't hold up.
Does not hold up. I will say, though, of the two books, the first story in Cruel Universe number one by Matt Kent and Kano, maybe one of my favorite short comic book stories I've read at least all year, if not in a very good long while. It is on par with the best episodes of The Twilight Zone. Superb. I will say zero about it, because to say anything about it really spoils the joy of reading that story. But even more so than Epitaphs from the Abyss, which is a very solid collection, Cruel Universe number one, worth picking up for that story alone.
Cool.
Yeah, you don't agree, Pete.
No, I agree. I'm trying to remember which one it was.
Oh, that's the alien fighting planet. The alien planet.
Oh, yeah, that was cool.
Yes, great, great story.
Yes.
Definitely pick it up for that.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Wolverine Blood Hunt number 4 from Marvel, written by Tom
Waltz.
Back to the hunt has begun again. Art by Juan Jose Rip. And it's about to end because it's the last issue of this miniseries. Wolverine is a vampire and he is fighting his old friend Maverick, who is also a vampire. And there's another two vampires, one of which Wolverine wants to kill and the other one he wants to kiss. Guess which is which?
Smoochie boochies. I love how the Blood Hunt is secretly a romance comic.
Should have called it Kiss Hunt.
Yeah, it should have been Kiss Hunt, because the smoocheroos in these that are out today are just glorious. So well earned. And
was the kiss earned in here?
We just lived through a vampire nightmare and murdered our way free. I think it's time for a little smoocheroo. I mean, what's more romantic than being caked in blood and, you know, alive?
So this character who is not Captain Britain, but is a vampire, and Wolverine, they're basically like co-workers, right?
Pete, you're talking about Night Guard and Wolverine?
Yeah, Night Guard. Is that her name?
Yeah.
Night
Guard? Put some respect on it.
Like the thing that you wear on your teeth when you sleep?
No, she guards the night, bro.
Oh, so she's Night Guard. Is her partner headgear? Is that who she works
with? Ooh, I hope not, because those combinations are rough, bro.
One of my favorite teammates of hers back in the day was Invisalign. What'd you think of Invisalign?
Oh, man, yeah. I think Retainer was more hardcore.
I agree. I have braces. Juan Jose Rip doing vampires is always worth a pickup in my book. So
fun. This was some fun. I mean, it was fun to see Wolverine, you know, usually Wolverine's working alone. Well, not usually. I mean, he's on a ton of teams. But I just thought the team up of him and Nightguard was fun. I'm a sucker for Wolverine having enjoyment in his life, okay? Mm-hmm. He's usually having a miserable time. So the fact that he got a little smoocheroo, I loved it. And, yeah, I also, you know, Maverick was chasing love as well. You know, he got lied to, and that's always heartbreaking. But, you know... I love the secret romance in the middle of a blood hunt.
The blood hunt. All right. Well, why don't we move on from the blood hunt to another big returning / new series. The Nice House by the Sea, number one from DC Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Alvaro Martinez Bueno. In the first series, The Nice House by the Lake, we met a bunch of friends who were taken to a house by their friend, and it turns out the apocalypse is happening outside. Things only got weirder and stranger and more horrifying from there as they unfolded this mystery. The conceit with this book is we are following a bunch of strangers who know they're going to this house for the end of the world. How does that affect them? How does that change things? There's more mysteries to come. As with the first series, man, Alvaro Martinez Bueno's art is just next level throughout. Oh. The character designs are fascinating. James Tynion has found some very different characters to throw in here. And without spoiling it, we should not spoil it. The thing that happens at the end of the issue made me giggle and gasp with joy.
Stop.
No, it's great. It's a great first issue.
First off, unbelievable cover. And this is just so cool, very creative and interesting. I love the look and vibe to it. Creepy and artsy. Fantastic kind of ending. And I don't want to give anything away. But JT4 is just killing it at this point. I mean, everything he does is just wow. I don't know how he's... but man, people should be studying because this is just phenomenal. The difference, I'm not picking this up and like reading and going, oh, this is JT4. It's impressive the different points of views and different things that he's doing and the levels to the creepiness that he's imbibing here. I'm really impressed by the work he's doing.
Yeah. Agreed. Self-Help, number two from Image Comics, written by Jesse Kellerman and Owen King, art by Mariana Ignasi. If you didn't go listen to our live show from a couple of weeks back with Jesse Kellerman and Owen King, where we talked about this book.
It's too bad we didn't bring it up.
It is. This is about a guy who works for a Uber-style company called Driver, who happens to pick up his semi-identical twin, not actual identical twin, but a guy who looks just like him, who is a very rich self-help guy. There's some big twists in this issue that redefined what we thought was going on in the first issue, as he ends up replacing the self-help guy after an accident. Great noir twisty mystery. I don't know how this main character is going to get out of this, or if I want him to get out of this because he's so reprehensible. Good stuff.
Yeah. I think like you said, this is the twists and turns are really fun. It's an interesting story. But I really think that the real hero is the art, because really kind of cool what is able to be pulled off in this this comic. And it all starts with the tone and the art that brings you into this world.
Hello, Darkness, number one from Boob Studios, written by Jude Ellison, S. Doyle, Robert Hack, Dave Cook, James Tynion IV, again, Sarah Anderson, Steve Orlando, and Garth Ennis. Art by Letizia Canonici, Robert Hack, David Cousins, Werther Deladera, Sarah Anderson, A.L. Kaplan, and Becky Cloonan. This is yet another... The Clunes, this is yet another horror anthology. There are a bunch of short stories in here.
Was it October?
Not quite. But there are two ongoing stories. We're getting a Something is Killing the Children story from James Tynion IV and Werther Deladera, and then an ongoing story that I believe is going to run through 6 or 7 issues, I don't remember which, from Garth Ennis and Becky Cloonan. That is the final story of the collection. I'm going to say something that I feel like you're going to get mad at me here for even suggesting, Pete. Ooh. But given that we have this, a horror collection, and also the EC comic stuff in the stack at the same time, it was hard for me to not compare them. And while I really like everybody who's involved in the EC comics thing, and I think there's some good stories in there, comparing the two of them, the EC comics thing, purposefully so, seems like the past. This seems like the future.
Take it easy. Don't shit on the other
thing. No, I really think so, because the EC Comics thing feels like a nostalgia play to me. I enjoy it, but it feels like stuff that I've mostly read before with some new twists. Hello Darkness finds
Mild friend.
New modes for horror that I haven't seen before, new iterations of horror stories in different ways. In particular, the Garth Ennis Becky Cloonan story in the back is so upsetting to read in a way that I would not ever expect from a Garth Ennis story in particular. But fantastic, that plays on our modern fears in a way that sent chills up my spine. You've also got Jude Ellison S. Doyle and Letizia Cannonici, who I'm completely blanking on the name of the book they did, but it was the one about the witches who lived in the woods and they had just moved to a house. Describing this very badly, but it was a fantastic Boom Studio series. You got Something Is Killing the Children. You got this bonkers story from Steve Orlando about sewing a hand onto
That was crazy.
Your stomach.
But what about the Lighthouse story? I love the Lighthouse story.
That was great as well. The art is next level here. Every story feels different. The writing feels like it's in different modes, but it does all feel like this creeping sense of dread while you're reading it. I love this.
I mean, Garth Ennis finds new ways to creep people out. Like, it's really impressive how he was like, you think I just like war stories, huh? Because I said I like doing war stories and stuff like that. I tell you what, I can fucking turn any story into something that freaks you out. Yeah, it's impressive. The collection of stories that you have does bring it to another level. And I got a little defensive because you're like, it feels like the past. But I think that is just what you think it's going to be. It's a collection of horror stories, and you think, oh, I know what I'm getting, and it delivers on that, which is great. But this is kind of like, oh, you think you know what you're getting, but then we're going to impress you with the not only the variety and the art and all that kind of stuff, but then the different ways that you kind of are messed with. Just next level shit.
Yeah. Strange Academy, Blood Hunt number 3 from Marvel, written by Daniel Jose Older, art by Luigi Zagaria and Eric Gapster. This is following the young characters of Strange Academy as they try to retake the Darkhold, who is now a little boy who is running away from Agatha Harkness, leading into a scene that I believe is probably somewhere in the middle of Blood Hunt number 5 by the end here. Pete, what'd you think about this series? What'd you think about this issue?
Well, it was real creepy the way you said little boy there. Stop. Please stop.
Will you talk about the Strange Academy Blood Hunt?
First off, amazing cover. And because of that cover, I was hoping for a little bit more doom in the story. But all that aside, I thought this was a fantastic ish. Love the art. Love the character design. They had such a cool look to everyone. Just a well-executed book. And I'm still loving the hunt. The Blood Hunt.
Well, we are done with the Blood Hunt for this particular stack, but I am sure we will return to the hunt someday. In the meantime, Batman Dark Age number 4 from DC Comics, written by Mark Russell, art by Mike Allred. This is a alternate history following Batman in a different world. I don't know what more to say about that. But here we are wrestling with him, taking on Dick Grayson and all that means, this very different Robin in a slightly more realistic world. I continue to really enjoy this. Mark Russell knows how to write some interesting cultural commentary skewed through the lens of Batman. Mike Allred and Laura Allred's art always is fantastic. Very Ginchy, as they would probably say. Great stuff.
Ooh, interesting. Yeah, I mean, when you see Mike Allred's name, you know it's going to be worth it for the art alone, and this really does deliver, especially with the Joker stuff. His art brings such a kind of creepy, fun tone to it mm-hmm. that I think kind of makes Joker a little feel a little different in an interesting way. Also, Batman had a very kind of cool, badass line about guns in this issue that I thought was worked really well for Batman and kind of says a lot. I think it was kind of cool the way they were jumping around on, as far as time is concerned. But, fantastic cover. This is a great package.
Feral, number 5 from Image Comics, written by Tony Fleeks, art by Trish Forstner and Tone Rodriguez, is following a sort of zombie rabies apocalypse through the lens mm-hmm. of dogs. Mm-hmm. Pete, I know this was one of your most anticipated issues of the week. Take it away.
Yeah, the Fleekers is killing this. This is just like, first I want to talk about the feeling that I get when I'm about to read a Feral comic. It's this kind of like, oh, shit, what's going to happen? Not really that. But the tension, the I don't know what's going to happen. I'm nervous. I think it's the mark of a great comic because you already start to care before you even open it. I just think that this is the really kind of brought this story to another level, and I think it's really just impressive from what I thought it was going to be, because at first I thought like, oh, it's just going to be fucked up shit happening to cute, adorable, Disney-looking animals, but the depths of this story is getting deeper and deeper, and I've just been really impressed with the story writing and not only the amazing art, but just kind of the tale that we are going on is so much better than I even expected, and I'm just having such a blast with this comic that at first I was like a little worried about, but now I just I think it's just really cool.
Yeah, the art is really killing it for me, and they're experimenting a lot every issue with the look of things and how they are laid out in terms of how we get the information about these characters, which I find very fascinating. Speaking of weird layouts, The Flash, number 11 from DC Comics, written by Simon Spurrier. What?
Oh, I was sorry. There was one thing I couldn't read in my notes before that I want to talk about. They did this really cool thing that I think – as humans, when there's an explosion or shock and people are just kind of gone, and the way they kind of did the scribbles in the kind mm-hmm. of, talking bubbles, I thought was so cool to kind of show trauma and to show shock and to when like somebody is just not there and then kind of back online. So I thought that artistically that was very impressive. And I think as a writer, it's a fun gift where you're like, oh, I don't have to write anything here. But
I don't think that's true.
They're cheating. But mm-hmm. No, I just wanted to kind of circle back to that and just say it was so powerful and so well done.
The Flash, number 11 from DC Comics, written by Simon Spurrier, art by Ramon Perez. In this issue, Wally West is continuing to be tormented by forces outside of his control while everybody else in his life tries to figure out how to get him back. After eking out a couple of wins over the past couple of issues, man, things are looking really bad for the Flash here. I love how tripped out Ramon Perez's art is, in particular, as Wally races faster and faster and gets stretched literally farther and farther. Just a great issue to look at beyond anything else.
Oh, my God, yeah. Cool covers. Love the tripped out, amazing art. Also, shout out to the glowing eye buffalo. I thought that was fun.
Yeah, I agree. The Sacrificers, number 10 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, art by Andre Lima Arujo. This is alternating perspectives between a character named Pigeon, who was meant to be a sacrifice, but ultimately has drank the god juice and is now wreaking vengeance on the gods. And the daughter of the sun and the moon, I believe, who has been thrust down to earth without her powers and just wants to eat something, and everybody keeps rejecting her, and over the course of this issue discovers a very dark new power.
Oh, boy.
I feel like Charlie Brown with football every single issue, because every single issue I'm like, here we go. This is where we start to turn it around. And I know better. I know better from years of reading Rick Remender comic books, but I still got that feeling at the end here after things being so down. This is a fascinating mythic world that I'm really excited to read more of, but it devastates me every single month.
Yeah, wow. Just another amazing issue. This team is delivering. I mean, the art is another level. The story is insanely good. This is just such a total package of a comic. And each time the stakes get higher and higher, and each time this team delivers more and more. This continues to get better with every single issue, and I can't wait to see what's going to happen next.
Zatanna, Bring Down the House, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Mariko Tamaki, art by Javier Rodriguez. This is a Black Label book, and Zatanna says she can't do magic. You won't be surprised to learn she kind of can, but after a demonic creature attacks her magic show, she is brought further into the world of magic, literally underground in Vegas. Pete, this was another one of your big picks for the week, so talk about this one too.
Vegas, baby. Yeah, amazing cover. Love all the twists and turns in the story, but man, this is worth it for the art alone. I mean, we're talking super tight bananas. Damn, this is impressive art, bro.
I pulled out the bananas for this one. It's been a while. That's right,
dusted that off.
Man, I agree with you, though. I love Mariko Tamaki's writing here. Her characterization of Zatanna is perfect, but it's all about Javier Rodriguez's art, and she is just leading into it in terms of giving him some wild vistas to draw throughout. There's some great characterization as well for the individual characters. Must pick up. Spawn Kills Every Spawn, number 1 from Image Comics, written by John Layman, art by Rob Sketchcraft Duenas. This is a self-professed joke book where a little chibi Spawn gets fed up with being the least important Spawn and decides to kill every Spawn of the title. Pete, you love Spawn. Was it a bummer to see them die?
Yeah. I mean, this is a fun idea, great art, but it just feels weird for some reason. I don't know. It's almost like a I Hate Fairyland kind of take on Spawn in a weird way. And also it's making fun of itself, but it's weird because it's not in on the joke. You know what I mean? Like, it's making fun of collectibles and all this stuff. And I'm like, Todd McFarlane does all these sports action figures and all these like cards and collecting cards and all this kinds of stuff. And I'm just kind of like, you know, you're making fun of the people who are supposed to be reading this book. So it gets a little bit like, hey, I like these things. You know what I mean? So it's a little weird, but I think
that's okay. I didn't have as much of a problem with that as you did. I do think there's, in particular, a 2-page spread at SpawnCon that shows off all these different booths that have a lot of parody Spawns, including a I Hate Fairyland Spawn, among other things that I thought was very fun. My main problem is this is too packed, which makes it hard to read. It reminded me a little bit style-wise. I don't know if you've read Invader Zim or Johnny the Homicidal Maniac. Or it looks a little Yoden Vasquez, but it's too cluttered every panel. So it
kind
it's
of reminds me of Mad Magazine a little bit.
It's hard to read because it's hard to know where your eye is supposed to go, which is a bummer. I wish there were less jokes in here so I could focus more on the jokes that work. Uncanny Valley, number 4 for Boom Studios, written once again by Tony Fleeks with art by Dave Wachter. This focuses on a kid who has found out he's part cartoon, and not only that, he's key, perhaps, to saving the cartoon kingdom, but only, as we find out this issue, in the most horrible way possible. Great emotional issue of this book that continues to dig into the characters in interesting ways. You're nodding yes, Pete, so take it away.
Yeah, this is awesome. I don't know why this gets me so much, but like, I don't know, maybe it's because I felt like I was raised on cartoons a little bit.
You were raised on cartoons, and the Pecos Bill Yosemite Sam character looks like you. So I think you identify with him.
That's a little ridiculous, and I'm offended by that. But the Fleekers is on fire.
You're literally wearing a gigantic cowboy hat right now.
I am not, and I don't appreciate the fact that my Pete, corn put away pipe
put
is
away the dynamite
the
plunger
right.
You don't have to blow me up, Pete. Put it back okay. into your pants where it belongs.
Yeah, I just think that this works really well, and the fun twists and turns that this is taking, I'm just really impressed by the package and the fact that they can have something that's so cartoony and something that's so realistic in the same comic, and it works so well. Yeah, it's just impressive the levels that this works on.
Uncanny Valley, number 4. We just said that. Void Rivals, number 11 from Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Lorenzo DeFelici. This issue, our Void Rivals continue to travel along with the Transformer, and a bunch of other stuff happens.
Yeah, I the nostalgia factor is too high for me. I'm having too much fun. You know, I felt like
you loved Void Rivals back in the day.
I liked Transformers back in the day.
Oh, okay, got it.
Specifically, the Transformers movie that plays off a lot of characters from that. But the yeah, I just think that this is has a little twist at the end where the guy was pressing spoilers, but he was pressing his luck a little too much, mm-hmm. and you know, so a little twist that I didn't see coming.
This title needs a little bit of a kick in the pants for me. I like Lorenzo DeFelici's art, but I don't know. There's something about this that isn't quite getting me yet. Yeah. I don't feel invested.
If you don't have a fondness for the characters, it's not going to, mm-hmm. you know what I mean?
This felt like, this is very much unfair, but this felt like a stunt at the beginning with a very light story, like Romeo and Juliet story. We haven't really moved beyond that. So if we're going to keep going with that, I need more stunts. There was a point in this issue where a character shows up and I was like, oh shit, is that one of the TV heads from Saga? And now we're going to bring in Saga here. But I think it was just another Transformer, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go. That's the sort of thing that I kind of hope they don't do that because it is just a stunt, but I kind of want them to be like, and here's the Care Bears. Let's go. Now they're in this universe as well. All right, let's talk about an original universe. Minor Threats, The Fastest Way Down, number 4 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Patton Oswalt and Jordan Bloom, art by Scott Hepburn. Playtime is at her lowest point possible as her daughter has been taken by a teen team who wants her to reveal all of her secrets. It all goes down in a heartbreaking way in this issue. And not only that, right before we taped our show tonight, big news, Minor Threats is being adapted for Netflix for a TV show.
Whoa.
So that's pretty cool. I will take issue to the way pretty much everybody framed it as Patton Oswalt's Minor Threats is being adapted. Hey, there's a couple of other people involved.
Yeah, there's some. Yeah, I mean, you know, he might be the biggest name, but don't put, you know, this is a team effort here.
Come on. Nobody's charging for ink. It's digital.
There's a lot of twists and turns in this. It goes down in this issue, and a lot of things go wrong. This was kind of a tougher issue emotionally to kind of get through. I'm still enjoying the crap out of this. The art's fantastic. A lot of crazy characters.
Yeah, this is a great new superhero universe. I actually love the place that we end up in because it is so heartbreaking and it gives, it's like, I don't know, we talk about this all the time, but like it's kind of the Empire Strikes Back ending of you had the first Minor Threat series, second one ends with the characters in the lowest, most dire place possible. How do they get out of that? I guess we'll see if they do at all. But
one of them's got turned into a Jedi. That's a...
Okay, I haven't seen the third movie yet, so don't spoil it for me.
Oh, okay.
Universal Monsters, Creature from the Black Lagoon That Lives, number 4 from Image Comics, written by Dan Waters and Rom V, art by Matthew Roberts. This book is a sequel to the original Creature from the Black Lagoon, and here we have an intrepid reporter is trapping down a serial killer who's turning himself into the creature, but the real creature is in the background. It's pretty gross body horror going on in this issue. Standout for me here is Matthew Roberts' art, does some very creepy stuff with the creature and shading throughout the book. Nice book. I like this overall, even though I thought the Dracula book was beautiful. I thought this was far more successful. And I am stoked for Michael Walsh's Frankenstein book that's coming up.
I really love this. I thought they executed an idea so well here, and spoilers, but the creature kind of like saving the woman here and then gets scared off by her. And the fact that the monster's like, yo, you humans are too much, was, I think, such a cool, smart choice where we're the monster. You know, I just thought that that was fantastic.
Us?
I loved the execution of that. Yeah, I thought it was really great where it was like just showing humans. And he was like, nah, man.
Yeah, peace out, yo. I'm out of here. Back to the Black Lagoon with me.
Yeah.
Something is Killing the Children, number 39 for Boob Studios, written by James Tynion IV, art by Werther Delladera. We are continuing the Year Zero storyline for Erica. We're getting a little bit of her backstory. And in this issue, she goes to therapy. This was such a great focused issue. I really delves into why this character is special and interesting. It was very emotional as well at the same time. Really, really well done. A standout issue of this already standout series.
Yeah, this is a kind of a crazy idea here of like, what if our main character sat down for a therapy session? I loved how much kind of backstory we got, how much origin story we got. I think that's one of the things that's kind of, you know, a lot of people say is missing. But I love this character so much, I'll sit with her even during her therapy sessions, you know what I mean? Like, you really got to love somebody to sit through their therapy session, you know what I mean? Because therapy is not the most exciting thing to sit through, because it's a lot of talky,
that's what I was
going to
say, more seriously.
No, show me action, you know what I mean?
It's very impressive that Werther Delladera, from a visual perspective, makes this feel so dynamic and tense and emotional, given that, for the most part, it is two people sitting in a room for 20 pages or so. So
yeah, it is impressive artistically, right? How they like pull in on stuff, kind of zoom in on certain,
very cinematic.
It is, it's impressive. That holds the tension well. Yeah, this continues to be fantastic. Art's unbelievable.
Last but not least, Local Man, number 12 from Image Comics, written by Tony Fleeks and Tim Seeley, art by Tim Seeley and Tony Fleeks. A evil cult has invaded Farmington, and our local man is teaming up with his biggest villain, kind of, to try to take them down. Also, Dan Quayle is dead, canonically, in the continuity of this. They killed Dan Quayle last issue. This is just, the details that get thrown in here are so funny and so wild. In the middle of some incredibly tense and, again, very emotionally charged stuff in this issue in particular for a main character. Great. I love this series. I continue to love this series, and I will love this series until my dying day.
Wow. Fleek and Seeley, man. Oh, another banger-ish. I mean, this is great art, great storytelling. The twists and turns are so very enjoyable. Just still great stuff after all these issues. You know what I mean? All 12 of them.
Yeah, it is great. They also open up a new mystery here that's teased both in the front story and the back story that I thought was so well done and plays off of character reveals in a way that I've never seen before. I thought really good. They continue to deconstruct superhero comics in a very smart way without being too over the top winky about it.
The combination of comedy that is Fleek and Seeley is really
fun. Fleek and Seeley, man. Fleek and Seeley.
Fleek and Seeley.
Fleek and Seeley. And if you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.